Hello, aliens, ghosts, and robots. It's Keith. Thank you for joining me again for episode 3 of An Invisible Sun. Before we get going, I want to send a special thank you to members of my Patreon who have helped make this possible. Members of my Patreon get special perks. They get ad-free versions of all my work. They get copies of my ebooks and audiobooks, previews and early releases, and other fun stuff, which is my way of saying thank you for supporting the creative work that I do. If you're curious and interested, would like to help out, or say thank you for the content you enjoy, go to patreon.com/wkeithtims. That's WKEITHTIMS. And I sure would appreciate it. So let's get into the story. I do want to point out some content warnings for this particular episode. There's gunshots, and a reference to suicide, and some blood as well. Listen with care. An Invisible Sun by W. Keith Timms. Chapter 3. And then this was the moment. I'd given this lecture so many times over the years, I didn't really have to prepare anymore. I used to try to speak extemporaneously, but by now it had all been memorized. I could listen to myself speak as if I were one of my students.
The Industrial Revolution, then, like the Renaissance, is considered one of the pivotal moments in Western history. Explosions of invention, changes in philosophy, new cultural ideas all end up altering the very way human beings live our lives. Changes so significant, in fact, that we never go back to the way we were before.
I looked out at my students. As usual, most stared, vacant and listless, slumped down in their desks. A few seemed semi-attentive and were taking notes. A couple of others were asleep, but all of them projected an air that they would rather be somewhere else doing something else. Frankly, I felt the same way. My classroom was a small amphitheater, built to hold about 100 students. Two-thirds of the seats were empty. Many among my class were watching the lecture remotely over the network, but I never saw them or even knew anything about them, other than what appeared in a long roll of names and identification numbers. They don't love history like I do. Or, if they did, they didn't show it. History is a window into what makes us human. It is full of stories of startling audacity and spectacular failure. We have such a hard time seeing ourselves as we are in the middle of living our lives. History gives us a way to see who we are by who we were. For me, it was an exciting tool of insight. I'd gotten into academia because it allowed me to dig out the secrets of humanity. Humanity, which, to me, is sometimes bafflingly opaque. I had also hoped to find other people to share my excitement with. But I didn't really have anyone to share with anymore, not even on campus. Especially since Evan had retired and moved to Mars after his wife died. And not among these students. I understand. They are under a lot of pressure to get what they need for a decent job, something with the large corporations like Shayot or SMSS. From what I understand, the corporations don't particularly care if a student has good grades or not, at least not for the entry jobs that they are likely to land. To keep enrollment up, the deans keep pressure on us to give everyone at least a C, with a minimum of fuss. It is a cycle of mediocrity, but one born of practicality. My hand and my side were killing me. I still felt hot, flushed. I thought about getting trampled at the subway station and how helpless and useless I felt then. And on the roof last night, and now again staring at the students who could not afford to be inspired. It's easy to blame them, to write them off as just going through the motions, especially when you're doing just the same. It's not fair. A long time ago, I had given up trying to ask questions of my students, attempting to draw them out, or to stimulate an intellectual debate. Nearly every time I had done so, all I had gotten back were blank stares and stony silences. But maybe I shouldn't have. Maybe, even here, there was a student who liked history. Maybe I wasn't as alone as I imagined. So I tried to find out.
So, who can tell me about some basic similarities between life during the Industrial Revolution and the world we live in right now?
A few raised their heads, surprised. A couple smirked. Most, though, stared at their computer tablets, tapping the screen, most likely socializing or playing games. But I wanted an answer, and I pushed for one. I tried to meet every set of eyes I could, moving from face to face.
Well, let's look at the Industrial Revolution. What were its hallmarks? Centralized urban population centers. Mechanization and despecialization of the workforce. Large-scale consumption of natural resources and the pollution that accompanies it. Labor conflicts setting the stage for the rise of unions. What do you think the people of the Dickensian era would say about how we lived our life now?
Silence and blank stares.
Dickensian. Charles Dickens? Oliver Twist? Please, sir, I want some more. You think they might have felt at home here in the 22nd century?
I turned my attention to the front row, and my heart froze. One of the students stared right back at me, with tears in his eyes. He was a young man, thin and hard, his ancestry indeterminate, a melange of many cultures. But his complexion was ashen, his body anemic and emaciated, just skin draped across bones. But despite this, an explosive tension filled his body. He seemed coiled up in his desk like an overwound spring. Sunken and bruised eyes stared out from his stubbly, shaven skull. Was he on drugs? Dealing with some sort of personal stress? He looked sick. Sick as me. I don't even remember him from when I came in.
They're dead.
He looked down into his lap. I couldn't tell if he was answering my question or talking to himself. Tears rolled off his bony cheeks and splashed onto his desk. The class was sensing something was wrong, shifting in their seats, whispering to each other. I glanced at the screen in my lectern and found his seat on the chart. His name was Ken Zinn. I approached him and lowered my voice.
Mr. Zinn, is it?
I tried to sound comforting, but I can't tell if I'm succeeding or not.
If you have problems, that is, if there's something you're dealing with, I can contact the University Counseling Center. I can look up their number. We can...
Ken Zinn abruptly rose from his desk, a hard, scarecrow figure in grungy jeans and a white tank top.
They don't care. They don't even see us.
His sunken gaze lifted toward me, and then past me. No, through me. His eyes widened in horror and misery. I fell back a step, alarmed. He looked like a ghost, the color drained out of him, only the scrawny shell of a young man left behind.
There. Do you hear? Do you see?
The students sat frozen, alarmed and transfixed. Some started filming on their mobiles. He was staring at something through me or behind me, something which wasn't there. Blood rushed in my ears. Sweat rolled down my back. I raised my hand, trying to calm him.
Mr. Zinn, it's okay. Just sit back down.
Slowly, Ken Zinn's arm came up until it was level with me. He held a pistol. He must have hidden it in his shirt. The weapon was snub-nosed, squat, grimy. An instrument of pain and death. And he was pointing it at me with a scrawny, shaking arm. Except he wasn't seeing me. My stomach had turned to water. The students gasped. Zinn's lips pulled back to reveal his uneven teeth, and, in a voice dripping with heartache, said,
"Please, sir, I want some more."
His hand trembled with the effort to squeeze the trigger. The gunshot was far louder than I had expected, setting off a ringing in my ears. A flash of light, smoke, a hot, tearing sensation through my shoulder. Students screamed. I fell backwards onto the floor, a sharp whiff of spent gunpowder. I looked up in time to see Ken Zinn put the barrel of the gun under his chin and pull the trigger again. The top of Zinn's head opened like a flower. There followed a hideous silence in the room as the students stared in horror. Zinn somehow just stood there for half a second. And then there came the oddest sound, like a faint, soft rain, as a scarlet mist of blood descended from where it had been blown upward by the shot. It spattered the desks, the floor, and Zinn's white t-shirt as he toppled over. The campus security alarm went off in the hall. Students screamed, rushed for the exits. I remained on the floor. Blood spread warm and wet over my shoulder and chest. My heart pounded in my ringing ears. What had he been looking at? What had he seen? An Invisible Sun is written, produced, performed, and composed by W. Keith Timms and is a production of Alien Ghost Robot Creative Media. If you're enjoying the story, please tell your friends and family about it and leave stars or reviews on your favorite podcast platforms. I hope you'll join us on our Discord server or sign up for our mailing list so we can stay in touch. Members of our Patreon get to hear future episodes early, plus other cool perks for all our shows. Go to InvisibleSunPod.com for more information.